Today on the Church Next podcast, we're going to be talking about a subject that we don't often like to hear about, death. Death is something that we often see as a struggle for survival at all costs. As Christians, we view death as an entrance into another plane of existence rather than as an end. With God's help, we can accept this process as the natural end to the lives that God has given us here and make it as simple and painless as we can for ourselves and our loved ones. If we accept the inevitability of death at the end of our lives, the experience of dying can be spiritually powerful and even beautiful. Instead of fighting, we make ourselves as comfortable as possible, surround ourselves with people whom we love, make right any wrongs as we can, and reflect on the beauty that our lives have held. Hello and welcome back. I'm Carrie Graves with Church Next. Today we'll be hearing from Tom Krell, a hospice nurse and Episcopal priest. Tom knows about death. He spent decades tending to the dying and says no one, especially people of faith, should fear life's inevitability. Today we'll be talking about death as a spiritual event, offering advice for caregivers, advice for patients, and faith stories. On today's podcast, we're going to talk about suggestions for dying people and their caregivers, and about ways to make the process of dying rich and spiritually beneficial rather than degrading and painful. In this first section, we'll talk with Tom about how we might change our perspective on death, how we might come to see death as a natural end to our lives rather than as a monster or an enemy. The idea that death could be kind, arriving as a courteous friend rather than as an enemy, is unfamiliar to many in our culture. Even Christians who believe in an afterlife with God tend to dread death. Let's hear from Tom on how we can change that perspective.
In this world, we are all terminal cases. No one is going to get out of this place alive. We're all going to die. So I think it's very important that as human beings and as Christians, we face the reality of death and that we don't have to be afraid. I've been around dying people as a hospice nurse I worked as a hospice nurse for 16 years. And as a priest for many, many years, I've been around dying people. It's not an experience to fear, but it's an experience to embrace and even to celebrate. The mystery of death is something that's a part of our humanity, a part and process of our humanity. And I like to look at it as a spiritual event. The word spiritual, of course, comes from the Latin word spiritus, which means spirit, Holy Spirit, our spirit, human spirit, but it essentially means breath. The Spirit of God is the breath of God. And at the very beginning in the book of Genesis, the Spirit hovers over the water and brings creation about. And that Spirit continues in the world and continues as God breathes His own life into us. And so we are inspired by God. We are inspired by His Holy Spirit. And as throughout our life, we continue to breathe, and so we call it respirations, breathing over and over again. And finally, at the end of life, the Spirit, the breath of God, goes out of us in terms of our human body, and we expire. All those words, it seems to me, are important to fit together. And the last one that I always like to talk about is conspire or conspiracy, that we are in this game together. We conspire together. The whole process is not something that needs to be painful. The process is something that's mysterious, and we don't have to be afraid. I guess one of the things that I say over and over again is, as a Christian growing up, and then as a priest, I always believed in eternal life, but as a hospice nurse, I've experienced the reality, and now it's not just a belief, but it's a confidence. It's a confidence that this life is not the end of things. That there is something beyond this life. That, and we don't have to be afraid. One of the stories that I like to tell is the story of Mary. Mary was a hospice patient in a nursing home, and her family had asked me when they signed her up for hospice if I could get a priest to do the last sacraments or the sacrament of the sick with Mary. I said I would try to call somebody, and I neglected to do that. Well, one day I came into the nursing home, and Mary was nearing the end of her life, and it just was very clear to me from all the signs that she wasn't going to live long. And I called the family and I said, I feel terrible because I didn't get a priest in here to do the sacrament, but because I am a priest, a retired Catholic priest, I can do the sacrament. I said to the sister of the dying woman, any other family nearby, call them in. And she called in two or three other family members, the nursing home nurse and nurse's aides were there, the hospice aide. I prayed over her, and then I said to her, Mary, it's okay, you don't have to be afraid. Jesus is waiting for you. She took one last breath and died. Well, there wasn't a dry eye around the bedside. I truly believe that that kind of death was what I like to call a good hospice death.
Solitary death shows up much as a painful theme in TV and movie culture. We want people to love us and to be nearby when we die. Tom suggests that people's discomfort with death, their pain at knowing that they will lose a loved one, or their extreme discomfort at being around death, can sometimes keep them from visiting dying family members. Becoming more comfortable with the idea of death and braving our discomfort even when we do experience it can make the end of a beloved person's life richer and beautiful. Let's hear from Tom on how the most crucial acts we can take are being there and letting dying people we love know how much they are loved.
To me, it's just so important that as human beings, we tell one another that we love one another, you know. Sometimes, especially us guys, it's not a macho thing to say, I love you, but it's so important, and you know how much it means to you when you hear it. And again, the dying person might not be responding, but they're definitely hearing right up till the end, you know. Well, obviously depending on how alert the patient is, but to bring family photographs in, an album, maybe mother's wedding pictures, you know, things that recreate family experiences for the dying people. Very important, it seems to me, to bring children. You know, sometimes we want to protect children from this, but the dying person needs to see their great grandchildren, you know, and kids get through it. They understand. They understand more than we give them credit for doing, you know. So I'd say bring pictures, bring children, bring, especially if it's been a part of your family life, bring music, you know. Bring prayer, you know, obviously. For those of us who are part of the Christian belief system, prayer is important, and community prayer, you know. Bring Eucharist, you know. Sometimes people can't swallow much, but the priest or the minister of communion can break off just a little piece of the host or a little drop of the wine, and it means so much, you know. Well, I would say to the family who are hesitating to come, what would you like if you were in that bed? Would you want to just be alone, or would you want your family to be around you? it's not easy. You know, hospitals and nursing homes, you know, are not pleasant places to visit. But your loved one is there, and they're waiting for you. You know, and again, I would encourage people to recognize that it's not a fearful thing, that it can be a very loving thing, a hand-holding thing. I would say it's critical when somebody dies and their family member has hesitated to go or was afraid to go, and then the person dies, then they live with that feeling of guilt. I should have been there. I should have done more. So I'd say it's critical. To the extent that you're able, and sometimes you're not, you know. If I have a job in California and my mother's in New York and I can't fly there and be with her for 2 weeks before she dies, maybe it's just one phone call. You know, now with Skype, you can do all kinds of magical things. It seems to me it's just so important to be together, you know. Generally, it's important for family members to share in the dying experience, to be together with the loved one, but to recognize that maybe at the very end, the loved one is going to want to be alone. And that's okay. Don't be hurt if families that say, oh, I was there for 48 hours and then I just needed one cup of coffee and that's when she passed. That's what she chose to do. It's okay. Don't feel guilty about it. You've been there and you've been as supportive as you can during these last 2 weeks. If you were not there at the moment she took her final breath, it's okay, you know. If your loved one is in pain and needs more pain medication, it's okay. You don't have to die in pain. You can. Morphine is a wonderful gift that God gave us. Caregivers who say to the person, don't give up, keep fighting, keep fighting. I always say, if you want to give up, it's okay. I guess in the end, it's saying how much you love the person and sharing that love and holding hands, you know, around the bedside.
Knowing theoretically that everyone must die is one thing, confronting the reality of one's own death can be quite another. Now we're going to hear from Tom as he offers comfort and advice to people who are afraid of dying or who wonder what they should be doing. Tom discusses both spiritual and earthly reasons that we need not fear and suggests areas on which we might focus in order to resolve matters of importance before our loved ones die.
You shouldn't fear because there's something more beyond this place. And the process with support, especially in our modern medical science, with the support that we can offer the dying patient, it doesn't have to be a fearful experience. For example, pain. Pain is a reality. It's an important part of our humanity. And especially in the dying process, it's there. But hospice or any good medical team can offer pain relief. There's all kinds of medications out there that can ease your pain. Tell the doctors what the patient needs. Don't be afraid. I had a doctor who used to say to me constantly, you don't want this patient to become an addict, do you? And he's talking about 80-year-old patients in a nursing home. I said, I'm not worried about addiction for them. What I'm concerned about is that they be free from pain, and you can help provide that. If there is something that's holding you back in terms of a family issue, you know, if you can call your child or your sister or brother in and say, "It's okay, I forgive you," or "Please forgive me for how I've hurt you," that's to me that's very, very important at the end of life if you can do it, you know. There is a support team out there that can stand with you and help you through this process. And don't hesitate to ask for that, you know. Sometimes doctors want to keep people alive at all costs. If you believe that there's something beyond here, you don't have to keep fighting to stay alive. You can call somebody in to keep you as comfort. What I always tell families when they sign up for hospice is our goal is not to have people die immediately, but to keep them as comfortable as possible for as long as possible. And it's whether that's 10 minutes or whether that's 3 years, our goal is to do that. And as family and as a team of medical professionals, we can provide a spirit of being comfortable because you're surrounded, and know that again, you can move on because you got the support of people on this side. And it might not be something spiritual or something. It might be a strawberry daiquiri, or it might be a cigarette. You know, God forbid that you have a cigarette when your aspirations are bad. But if that was a habit that gave you joy in your life, and you want to have one last cigarette, go ahead and have it. You know, a video of I Love Lucy or some TV show you like. Whatever, if we can get it for the person, do it for the person. And as you get closer to the end of your life, your breathing is going to be have these periods of what we call apnea, where you breathe and then maybe 10 seconds and you breathe again, and that's okay. That's part of the dying process, and you don't have to be afraid about it. And again, the research out there says that people who have gone through near-death experiences and have come back say that erratic breathing or rattled breathing at the end of the life is not uncomfortable for them. It's much more uncomfortable for the family standing around. Don't be afraid to ask for support. You know, again, the medical profession, the medical science is such that there's just so much we can do to help at the end of life. We can offer the spiritual support, but we can also offer the spiritual support that comes from medication. Sometimes at the very end of life, it seems like the person sometimes wants to be alone. They don't necessarily want to have their family around. And again, you talk to nurses or doctors and they'll tell you over and over again that family are around a dying patient for a long time, and then they step out for lunch or a cup of coffee, and that's when the person chooses to die. It's almost like at the very end, the person says, it's just between me and Jesus. I don't necessarily want you to see this happen. That does it always happen frequently? Like in that first story that I told, it's nice to have everybody holding hands around the bedside and having the death happen that way.
Faith stories are an important part of talking about death. We often hear about near-death experiences of people who describe walking through tunnels of light or floating above their bodies. But Tom's going to tell us a bit about good death experiences, not grand escapes from death as the enemy, but scenes of people accepting death naturally and peacefully, scenes that he has witnessed over many years of pastoral care and hospice work. He describes ways in which people sometimes resist death and suggests ways in which we can encourage loved ones to allow themselves to die peacefully.
I had a patient whose name was Gertrude. She was 104 years old, and her family would come in regularly and say, "Mom, don't give up." The nursing home staff said to me, "Could you convince this family to let her go?" And so I called the two eldest children. The oldest daughter was in her 80s. I said, "Your mother is ready to go." She had essentially stopped speaking for about a month, was eating just very sparingly, if at all. And I said, especially this family was a very active Christian family. And I said, "You know, you believe that there's a life after death. Don't be afraid to let her move into that next life." And the daughter said, and the oldest son said, "Yeah, we agree, but it's going to be hard to tell her." And I said, "Well, if it was my mother, this is what I'd say. I'd say, you've taken good care of us. We are all going to be all right. Your children and grandchildren are all going to be all right. We know that there's a life beyond here that Jesus is calling you to. Don't be afraid. If you want to move on, it's okay." Well, we walked into the room, and this 80-year-old daughter says to her mom, almost like she read this script that I gave her, "Don't be afraid. We're all okay. We're going to be okay. Jesus is waiting for you." And this lady, who had not spoken in at least a month, looked up and said, "Carry me home." And the daughter and the son said, "Mother, you've been living in this nursing home for over a year. This is your home." And she said, "Carry me home." And I said to him, "I don't think she's talking about going to her house on the east side of Detroit. I think she's talking about letting me go to my eternal home." She died an hour later. She had been given permission to go. It was all right. Another story that I love to tell was one of my favorite patients. His name was Bill, and he had had some dementia, but a bunch of other physical things. He was in his 80s, late 80s, and his appetite went down. And as in medical science, what we do is we want to keep feeding people, so they put a feeding tube into his gut. And he had that in for, I don't know, 3-4 months. And he told me constantly, I don't like this thing. And I said, "Well, they're worried that you can't really take things by mouth, and so they're feeding you this way." And he said, "Do I have to have it in?" I said, "If you choose not to have it in, it's up to you." And I said, let's call your family together." And so we had a big family meeting. We had about 20 people in the room. And explained that if we remove the feeding tube, since he wasn't able to eat anything by mouth, it was only going to be a matter of days or maybe a week or so before he passed. Bill said, "I definitely want it out." Family agreed, and we got the doctor to write the order to remove the feeding tube. And his family gathered, and for about 3 or 4 days in the nursing home, there was a party in his room. They were telling jokes. They were sharing memories. And he was happy, and he died peacefully, again, in less than a week. I think it was about 4 days that he passed. What frequently happens, and you talk to anybody who's been around end-of-life processes for long, especially hospice workers, they can tell you dozens of stories. People start talking, if they're still cogent or able to speak, they start talking about, "Dad was in the room last night." "Dad died 20 years ago, Mother." "He wasn't in the room." I like to tell families, "He probably was." You know, or they talk about, you know, their mother and father, that "I saw my mom and dad and they're calling to me." And again, sometimes families discourage people from doing that. It's part of dying. And I can't tell you how often I've seen people that are on their deathbed reaching out because they see somebody, whether it's their family members or whether it's Jesus or God or whatever, they see somebody out there. And it's almost like a beatific thing that happens on their face. You see it. And again, if we've given the proper medicines or whatever to keep the person comfortable, that dying thing is not a painful thing, it's a beautiful thing.
That's the end of today's podcast with Tom. If you're interested in learning more about his ideas about death, pastoral care, and the afterlife, here are some suggestions. You can read the book When Breath Becomes Air by Paul Kalanithi, or The Good Death by Ann Newman, How We Die by Sharon Newland, and Awake at the Bedside by Koshin Ellison. You might be interested in other Church Next classes on topics related to pastoral care, death, and the afterlife. Try How to Visit a Sick Friend with Joyce Mercer, Courage for Caregivers with Jamie Haith, Grieving Well with Andrew Gerns, and What's Heaven Like with John Price. Visit churchnext.tv to take advantage of these wonderful courses. That's the end of today's podcast. Thanks for tuning in. If you'd like to learn more about us, please visit churchnext.tv. May the Lord bless and keep you. May the Lord shine His countenance upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord lift up His countenance upon you and give you peace today and forevermore.